The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you on WILL AM 580 here on Sunday, November 21st, 2004, in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we've got a great show for you. We are very fortunate to have as our guest one of the real authorities in media criticism in the United States today, Jeanine Jackson. Jeanine Jackson is the Program Director for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the National Media Watch Group, generally called FAIR. And she's a frequent contributor to FAIR's magazine Extra, and she is the co-editor of the FAIR Reader, an extra review of the press and politics in the 90s. Jeanine Jackson is probably best known as the co-host and producer of FAIR's syndicated radio show Counterspin, which is a weekly program of media criticism that airs on 130, 140 stations around the country, including both WILL and our local WEFT. You can hear Counterspin on WILL at 10:30 p.m. Every Thursday night, and you can hear it on WEFT at 5:30 p.m., WEFT 90.1 FM here in Urbana-Champaign, every Wednesday. So I'd like to welcome Jeanine Jackson to Media Matters. Jeanine?
Hi, Bob.
It's great to hear your voice again. We were just on the program together just over a week ago in New York in a tribute to Ben Bagdikian, which was really an honor.
It was a tremendous pleasure for me. I had never met Ben Bagdikian, although I one of those people you read about and think about so much you feel you know them, but it was a pleasure for me to finally meet him.
Yeah, and it was, I think, fitting that we had on the DS that night, we had Ben Bagdikian, we had yourself, and we had John Nichols. So we really crossed, I think, a figure. Ben Bagdikian has been instrumental in the movement among journalists and among scholars and citizen activists to really have an accountable free press in our democracy. And then the next generation that has gone on to form groups like FAIR to do media criticism, John Nichols, who's a political journalist, has written about this, to really take Bagdikian's work that he mandated to the next level.
Well, and I think he certainly has paved a way. I mean, FAIR certainly sees Ben Bagdikian, along with folks like I.F. Stone and George Seldes, Upton Sinclair, as a kind of leading light. Media criticism is not brand new, but you do need to adapt it in every moment. And certainly we at FAIR look continuously to the work that's gone before to determine what we're going to do in the future. But it's great to have that connection where some of the, you know, you don't have to learn every lesson 100 times. Folks have done some of this before, and we can learn from them, and we should.
Well, this is truly a wonderful era to be a media critic.
Indeed.
May not be a wonderful era to live in, but it's certainly a wonderful era to be a media critic, and there's a lot to talk about today. Listeners who want to call in with questions or comments or like to get Jeanine's opinion on something, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. And I'd like to just start, Jeanine, by talking about, I think, the largest story internationally of the last week or two, which is the U.S. Invasion and campaign in Fallujah. And I know that FAIR has been hawking this, monitoring it with its staff in New York every day closely. What is your what's your assessment and the assessment of the FAIR research team of the U.S. press coverage of the Fallujah campaign?
Well, if I can begin by citing another press critic, I just happen to have just read the piece by Jonathan Schell in the new issue of The Nation, where he's also talking about Fallujah, and he puts in some quotes from some pieces in a piece by Jim Hoagland in the Washington Post and one by Mark Bowden in the Los Angeles Times, and they really give you an indication of kind of the level of the media discussion of Iraq in general and then of Fallujah in particular, because he's talking about the piece in the Washington Post says that in Fallujah we're really battling not for hearts and minds but for minds alone rather than hearts and minds. And Jonathan Schell wonders, what can this possibly mean? And he goes on to explain that for Jim Hoagland in the Washington Post, the objective in Fallujah is simply to illustrate to Iraqis the price they will pay for supporting the insurrection. So here we have in the LA Times piece is kind of the same, is just kind of, we're going to devastate, the U.S. military is going to devastate the city of Fallujah, and the reason we're doing this, these newspapers are telling us in very calm and rational tones, the reason we're doing this is to to terrorize Iraqis, basically, into, you know, supporting the U.S.-backed government there. It just struck me, just these quotes struck me, just the poverty of the public discussion we're having around Fallujah, where we have reporters talking about devastating people's lives and talking about it as though it was, you know, moving a piece on a chessboard, you know. So my first reaction in terms of media coverage is a very visceral one, in that it simply gives me a chill to read news reporters, and let's leave aside for the moment that in most cases we're talking about chair jockeys who've never missed a meal themselves, you know, but talking about people losing their lives, people losing their livelihood, people being devastated, and saying, well, you know, that's just a tactical measure that we're doing in this war. You know, I think there's no way to have a really elevated public conversation about war with the proper weight when that's the tone that's being set by the media. It just gives me a chill.
This morning in the front page of the New York Times, there was a long story sort of going into what it's been like for the U.S. troops in the Fallujah campaign. And they're quite sympathetic to the horrid conditions there, the battle conditions they're in, and talks about many brave soldiers who have lost their lives. Yet what was striking, and I think comes to the point you were sort of making just now, is that it's really, you know, we're seeing one side and hearing about one group of people in this war, one set of soldiers. And, you know, what's been absent throughout the war seems to be any sort of recognition of the Iraqi price that's being paid.
Exactly. Well, even to the point of simply not hearing about Iraqi casualties, military and civilian casualties, military, if you will, casualties in Iraq. There seems to be, and it's not true, and I think listeners to your show understand that we're not speaking of media as a monolith. We're not saying every outlet does everything exactly the same way. I do think it's fair to say, looking across the board, though, that there has been a severe underrepresentation of just divergent points of view on this war, just, you know, people are familiar with the fact that, you know, studies Fair and others did in the run-up to the war found that critics of the war were horribly underrepresented. And since the war has continued, if anything, those voices have kind of gotten even smaller. And I'm not talking about tactical criticisms, but people who simply believe that the invasion and the occupation are wrong. When those voices are not present, then it simply makes sense that what we will be shaped by and informed by will be the administration's view, you know. And I think we hear a lot from reporters about how, of course, they're critical and, of course, they're skeptical of the White House. But the point is, those are the views that are represented, and we're not hearing from other folks. So the debate is just truncated. And when it comes to something like Iraq, that really means people are really not hearing anything like a complete picture of what's going on.
And going back to your starting comments and the casualties issue, I mean, this is a war, ostensibly, as the New York Times presents it and almost the entirety of our news media present it, that is about bringing democracy to Iraqis, liberating Iraq from the yoke of tyranny. Yet at the same time, the government position is that there should be no real discussion of Iraqi casualties. Now we're talking about Saddam's troops, civilian casualties. So the people we're liberating, we're not really having an official tally of how many of them paid the price of their liberation, or even any discussion of the price they are paying. It's simply our troops that are the
exactly.
major concern. And isn't this sort of a contradiction?
Well, indeed. And wouldn't we have questions as a society about that contradiction if we were able to have a full-on debate about it instead of having these confusing articles where, you know, and it is confusing, you know, if everyone's an insurgent, but then there's some are civilians, and the army is telling us, well, you really can't tell one from the other, and it's confusing, and I think Americans can be forgiven for not understanding what the U.S.'s objectives really are in Iraq, and it would help us in that understanding if we would see both critical questions asked of the White House and the contradictions themselves really spelled out and discussed in the media. You know, I hope folks understand that when we talk about reporters really representing all of the fallout, all of the impact of government actions, that doesn't mean reporters being knee-jerk against war. I mean, I have my own personal feelings about that, but that's not what we're talking about from a journalistic perspective. We're simply saying that media have a responsibility to represent and to reflect and to report, quite simply, all of the impacts and effects of a war or an invasion like this, so that the public can make an assessment of whether or not it's worth it.
We're talking to Janine Jackson today, Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in with a question for Janine or a comment, the phone number is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Janine Jackson is the program director for FAIR, the National Media Watch Group, and also the co-host and producer of Counterspin, the weekly radio program that can be heard here on WILL at 10:30 p.m. on Thursdays, or on our local community station, WEFT, every Wednesday at 5:30. WEFT is 90.1 FM. Let's go to the phone lines now. Line 4, Lansing, Illinois. You're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Hello. I'm on FAIR's listserv, and I was wondering if I could ask Janine something. I noticed on their messages around election time that they took a very slanted view for Kerry and against Bush, which I was very disappointed with because I didn't think there was a dime's worth of difference between the two candidates. And I was wondering if she could just describe what went into FAIR's thinking on that. And I'll hang up and listen to her answer. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you very much. Janine, I am also on the FAIR listserv, and I get the FAIR e-blast. And we should mention that if people are interested in getting these periodic emails with FAIR's analysis and concerns about press coverage on a breaking story, they can do so by just going to the FAIR website at www.fair.org. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah, and we'd certainly encourage folks to do that. We don't overload you. But
no, and I can honestly say I get the FAIR blast. I've gotten them from the very beginning, and they are invaluable. Even as this caller points out, you don't have to necessarily agree with everything.
Exactly.
I think the political viewpoint, your political viewpoints are irrelevant. These are really hard analysis, asking probing questions on well-done research. So I'd urge people to go to FAIR.org and hook up for these a periodic email blast. But to go to the caller's question, Janine.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think if you look at FAIR's main concern in any election is, and we're often accused of supporting one side more than the other, but truthfully, we try to be on the side of the public. You know, we try to ask not so much are reporters being fair to Bush or fair to Democrats, but are they being fair to the audience in terms of doing good, solid journalism? And in the last election season, it simply was the case that some of the most salient problems that we saw in mainstream media coverage had to do with an overweening kind of fealty and lack of criticism of the Bush White House, and a series of slipshod journalistic, malfeasances in the direction of John Kerry. It didn't really have anything to do with, and you'll have to trust me on this, there aren't a lot of people who are excited about the Democratic Party, per se, within the FAIR office. It really is not the case at all in that sense. But in this case, I think you simply have to say from a dry-eyed perspective that mainstream media were simply more unfair to Kerry than they were to Bush in this election season. One of the things that FAIR pointed to was this continual kind of false balance where reporters who were ostensibly doing fact-checking, who were calling politicians, calling Bush and Kerry to account for exaggerations or falsehoods that they were making, seemed to follow a plan where for every lie that the Bush administration or that Bush told, they needed to have an example from Kerry. And it sort of gave the impression that the Kerry campaign was exaggerating, was as loose with the facts as the Bush campaign was. And that simply is not the case. It's not the case that a comment like Bush saying that Kerry wants to nationalize health care is not on the order of some of the things that Kerry said, where, for example, he said that the cost of the Iraq war was $120 billion. And many journalists said, that's not true because was $200 billion. He's totaling up what it's cost and what it might cost, and so that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Well, I would disagree with that, but whatever one thinks about it, it's not along the order of the kinds of misleading statements that Bush made, and for journalists to sort of equate them with simply bad journalism. And so Fair called them on bad journalism, not anti-Kerry journalism.
No, had just to clarify this for the caller's sake and for other, for listeners for that matter, had the issues been reversed, had Bush been getting, they've been doing that to Bush and Kerry been getting the benefit of the doubt, do you think that Fair would have issued?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that I would have been surprised to see that be the case, particularly given the context of media's treatment of Bush. But sure, and if folks who think that Fair is in the pocket of Democrats can check it out real carefully by looking at our criticism during the Clinton years. There's a real simple check on that.
You know, a lot of people think, and I think it's not an uncommon belief, that the news media are prejudiced toward Democrats and that Kerry, of course, would be the favorite of most working journalists. It's a widespread belief. We hear it from callers on this show, and I get it, and you get it, too, from people who read our work or talk to us. And this, what you're saying seems to contradict that. You're saying that, in fact, Kerry got worse treatment for the most part in the news media, or not fair treatment compared to Bush. How do you explain that?
Well, it's interesting, and it goes back really to just things being a little more complicated than folks might think. I mean, part of the thing is that there's a difference between the beliefs you will find inside the heads of working journalists and the beliefs and opinions and attitudes that you will find expressed in the content of the newspaper or the media. We learned something very interesting in this election campaign because we had that comment from Redstone, from the head of Viacom, in which he said very clearly, Viacom, as a media company, our interest lies with Republicans. He made it very clear. I would simply submit to people that the head of Viacom's
Owns CBS.
Yeah, exactly, which owns CBS and many other things besides, that his opinion matters more, in fact, in determining the perspectives of the media outlets that he controls, that opinion, it is not lost on the employees of CBS that their owner believes that institutionally they should be behind a Republican. So that's one thing, is the kind of difference between working journalists and sort of decision makers who are able to set more of a tone and set parameters within a media outlet. Then there's simply the fact that some of the things that in this case cut against Democrats really were not necessarily politically motivated problems in journalism. The false balance thing that I just talked about, I think, is a result of what some people call, a kind of unfortunate professionalism among journalists. It's just kind of journalism 101. It's just sort of something you do to try to look even-handed by introducing ostensible balance into stories. It happened to be the case in this election campaign that sort of standard journalistic practice cut very much against the Democrats. So it's complicated a little bit, the way political attitudes play out in coverage.
I suspect we're going to have more time to talk about this issue, Janine, but we have a full bank of phone calls. So let's get to the lines. We're talking today to Janine Jackson, program director for Fair and the co-host and producer of Counterspin, the radio show heard here on Will every Thursday night at 10:30 and on our sister community station, WEFT, every Wednesday afternoon at 5:30, 90.1 FM. And Janine Jackson is with us today in Media Matters until the top of the hour. So please do call in, and I will get to all the callers. The phone numbers, of course, being 333-9455, and our toll-free number, which is, that line is open, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Hello. Hi, Janine, and hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Matt Murray from Urbana.
Hi, Matt.
And first, I really wanted to just praise Fair and say, I really have been educated by the work you do and appreciate it. But I did want to just ask you one question, and that is, sometimes when I listen to Counterspin, there seems to have been a sort of choice made to have at times the tone be somewhat sarcastic and I wonder, have you gotten any feedback on that? And I consider myself a fairly leftist person and very critical of the mainstream media, but sometimes I feel a little turned off by the tone of it. And I'll listen or respond more if you'd like me to.
Well, I think I'm going to let the phone lines open up, Matt, if that's okay, but let's let Janine answer you.
Well, it's not the first time that I've heard that, and it's not our intention to be off-putting. I guess part of part of what I would say is personal, which is that the things that we point to, like we were just talking about media discounting the lives of Iraqis and of U.S. people as well, you know, and the racism in media and the bias in media, it's very upsetting, you know, and my response to it is not always, well, let's have a dry kind of academic conversation. I think these are vital things. I think these are life and death things. I really want change. I really want things to be better in journalism. And I think sometimes that energy can come across as stridency. It certainly is not my intention, but I think it may be partly a factor of simply how strongly we feel about these things.
Now, how do mainstream journalists and working journalists respond to FAIR, to Counterspin, to the critique FAIR makes of journalism?
Well, there's a wide range of responses. Much of the response we get from journalists is positive. It tends to be very specific. They will say, you know, this particular article made these three good points, but I thought on this fourth point you were wrong. They have a very kind of careful understanding of the work that we do, and they like to be praised, and they don't like to be criticized. So we often hear from journalists when we have written something about them in particular, but there's a certain amount of respect for the work. Then at another level, there are people who say, and this came from a New York Times editor to a former colleague of mine, she said, oh, FAIR, we don't believe in you. And the attitude, which is the attitude of some folks in journalism, usually the higher-up folks, is that really nobody who is not a journalist has any right to criticize journalism. You know, that journalists criticize themselves, that that's enough, and nobody else really has standing, if you will, to even talk about it. We reject that view. We think that everyone is affected and impacted by media, and therefore we have not just a right but almost a responsibility to get involved in shaping it.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Hello, Janine. I've got a simple question. I'm wondering why there is such a press blackout, both on the left and in mainstream media, for covering the activities of the Iraqi Communist Party, the fourth or fifth largest force in the country. And I'll just hang up and let you have at that. Thank you very much.
Well, I can have at it only very briefly because I don't know enough about it to even comment.
No, that's a heck of a blackout, because I agree.
And I mean no disrespect. I think there are a number of stories that I, for one, know little or nothing about, and this would absolutely qualify as one of them.
But, you know, I do think, Janine, it does point to the issues you were getting to earlier and that we've been talking about in with regard to Fallujah and the Iraq War, which is, with all the press coverage, our knowledge of Iraq outside of the U.S. Army invasion is pretty pathetic.
And we're people who are consuming media, you know, night and noon. And one sort of other point that I would make is that often we get coverage of certain places in the world that is very apolitical. Iraq is one of those places where we get the impression from media coverage that everyone is motivated by religion, or, you know, the Middle East in general is presented as, you know, these are tribal wars, as opposed to Europe and the United States where things are political. You know, so you don't even really hear about parties, per se, as they differ from religious organizations with Iraq. You don't hear a lot of complicated discussion of the political history in the Middle East always. It sometimes gets kind of washed away in the midst of much more kind of, you know, simplistic coverage.
You know, one of the points that one of FAIR's sort of colleagues, I would describe him, is that Norman Solomon, who's been a frequent guest here on Media Matters, made in a recent column, was calling to task journalists for describing the soldiers working with the U.S. in Fallujah as the Iraqi forces, and then everyone they're fighting as sort of like non-Iraqis or something.
Exactly.
When, in fact, primarily most of the fighting is done by Americans versus Iraqis.
Exactly. And you hear about how the folks in Iraq who are pursuing elections are interested in defending their country. And I think, well, I bet the insurgents would say that they're defending their country also. You know, I mean, it's again one of those things where the language that we use reflects the kind of cross purposes and confusion of the policy itself.
We're talking to Janine Jackson today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is a live show, so we welcome your telephone calls here at 333-9455 or the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. 9455. We've got a couple of callers waiting, but before we get to them, let me announce that next week's program, we're going to have a U of I speech professor, Stephen Hartnett, as our guest. And 2 weeks from today, our guest will be New York Times columnist and economist Paul Krugman, joining us to provide his post-November 2 analysis of the world economy and world politics. So please join us the next couple of weeks. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 3, or Champagne, you're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My first question is, why aren't major networks and media outlets providing a broader perspective on the war, a broader picture of the war, talked about its limitations? I guess I'm wondering if Janine has comments as to what are sort of the structural factors that prevent a broader picture of the war. And I guess my second question, feeding off of that, what can people do to try to bring a broader picture of the war to the center of American public life? It's obviously such a major issue. It's so important to us, and yet it seems that our discussions are going to be impoverished as long as the coverage is the way it is. And I'll hang up and listen to our answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, those are excellent questions. Unfortunately, they're kind of big, and I wish I had simple answers to them. The question of why are we not getting wider and more complicated coverage of Iraq, let me first say that I think that, first of all, there has been all along, there has been excellent journalism being done on Iraq. The problems that I'm pointing to, you can find counterexamples, and I'm talking about, you know, in mainstream media, you will read accounts occasionally that are hard-hitting, that ask the right questions, that seek to answer them, and that really do bring you a perspective, an Iraqi perspective, as well as the perspective of, you know, the grunts and the working military. There's been good journalism being done. I think, in general, we're starting to see journalism on Iraq open up a little bit and be more open. Maybe it's a second-term thing. Maybe it's okay to criticize Bush now that he's in office. I can't quite guess what those reasons are, but I think we're starting to see a little more critical coverage in general.
Well, Janine, let me just interrupt on that point if I can. It seemed that, you know, during the presidential campaign, since journalists get so much of their cues by what people in power say or candidates say, sort of setting the boundaries of what's permissible debate, that insofar as, you know, Senator Kerry and his campaign was really not critical of the war in its fundamentals, but rather in its execution, that it really didn't open up the possibility of asking the more fundamental questions.
That's precisely right. I think you're precisely right. And that's the second piece to the caller's question in that sense. And again, going back to the earlier caller, is this ideology in journalists? I'm not a political ideology. I don't know. But there is something in them that says, we can only have a debate that ranges between basically what lead Democrats and lead Republicans are saying. It would be wrong for us to go beyond that range of discussion, even if, as in the case of the Iraq War, even if much of the country is outside that range of debate. People in power set the boundaries for permissible discussion, and that's a big part of the reason we haven't had a wider debate on the Iraq War.
Well, what do you think would happen, Janine, to a reporter if they listened to this show, said, "Oh yeah, Janine and Bob, they got some good ideas. Those callers too. You know, maybe we'd get our act together." And they did much more critical journalism than is being done. That they sort of adopted the stance of much of the free press in the rest of the world, which is less sort of dependent upon the United States government for the basis of what it's going to print and publish, and sort of independent of the U.S. government, and was therefore somewhat more critical of the U.S. position in the war. What do you think would happen to that reporter at, say, the Boston Globe or New York Times or Washington Post, not to mention CBS News?
Well, our experience suggests that reporters may, through a combination of pluck and personality and perseverance, be able to get some of those critical stories into a paper, and they may be able to get several of them in. What we have found and heard from journalists themselves is that it's very difficult to keep doing that. You do, at a certain point, get branded as a troublemaker. This administration in particular doesn't hold back at identifying individual reporters, you know, and saying, "We don't like this guy so much." That really doesn't help at media outlets today. You think they'd take it as a badge of honor, but it seems to be the case that they don't. And what often happens to journalists who really set themselves up to be critical and investigative all the time is that they often get worn down in mainstream media. You have brilliant folks like Robert Perry, you know, a former AP and Newsweek reporter.
And a recent guest on the show.
Well, see, there, and I didn't even know, dovetailing nicely. You know, a fine investigative journalist who was basically driven out of mainstream journalism because he was told again and again and again, you know, we're not going to do this story. We're not going to do this angle because, you know, it's simply not what we institutionally support. You bang your head against that enough times, and you start thinking about going to other outlets, independent outlets, alternative outlets, and that sort of thing. So unfortunately, those folks often get, either they reshape themselves to be the square peg, or they write once a year that critical story, and they make that enough for themselves, or they find another line of work.
Well, another option increasingly, and Robert Perry is an example of this, is going to the internet, starting a blog or a website, and doing your work independent of the commercial media. And this is, of course, one of the great phenomena of the past few years in the United States in media. What is your sense of the internet and the blogosphere as an antidote to the problems that FAIR so chronicles concerning our news media?
Well, and this actually brings us back to the second part of the previous caller's question, which was, what can we do? How do we get around these problems that we identify as structural problems? And I do think that the internet is part of the solution to that. I do think, basically, we need information out there. We need media to be bringing us all the information we need, mainstream, big, dominant media, and we need to work on media reform that will make them more capable of doing that, absolutely. And we could talk about that all day, but I also think in the meantime we simply need the information for those citizens who want to be able to seek it out to have a conversation. And the internet is one of the ways to kind of work around the mainstream media. You have to be more critical, but you know what? You have to be critical when you read the New York Times, too. You can't believe everything you read on a blog, heaven knows, but you shouldn't be believing everything you read anyway. And the internet does give you the option, with hyperlinks that take you back to original documents, for example. You can do a certain amount of work, really informing yourself in a kind of well-rounded way on an issue, but it does take time and it does take energy. But the internet is providing, as you say, Bob, it is providing a place for people and for work that find that they don't have a place in what you might call the elite press.
You're listening to Janine Jackson today, Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. We're coming to you live from Campbell Hall on Sunday, November 21st, 2004. Janine Jackson is the program director for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and the co-host and producer of Counterspin, the weekly program of media criticism that airs here on WILL every Thursday night at 10:30 p.m. and also on the local community station WEFT every Wednesday afternoon at 5:30, 90.1 FM. We do have a full bank of callers. I promise I'll get to you all. Please be patient, and I'll take as many calls as we can because we've got a packed lines for you, Janine.
Great.
The number here, 333-9455, and our toll-free number is open now. That line is open, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Hi, good afternoon. I think you shouldn't sell yourself short, and you should mention your publication, too, and get people to subscribe and respond to the action alerts. And I think people should issue their own action alerts, too, because a lot of times, like the New York Times, they'll dismiss something from that they see orchestrated by FAIR. So that's just I really appreciate your work, and I hope people do support FAIR. I've moved to call because of Scott Simon again. I don't know if anybody's doing a Scott Simon watch on the web, but I think it's about time because he sort of piles them up higher and higher. This last weekend he did a commentary. This is the host with Weekend Edition. He did an opinion on press freedom in Iraq, and he made the claim that the Marines understand press freedom because this NBC footage was shown. While at the same time, you know, Reuters is complaining about three of their videographers killed in the last year and a half, I guess, and people getting beat up still, intimidated by the U.S. military. Even a chief executive from CNN is saying there's only limited progress in negotiating. So something, you know, from National Public Radio that is absolutely contrary to what you don't have to read very far to understand. And I don't know if you issue an action alert on something like that. It's not a hard news story, but it's his, you know, opinion thought piece that is quite thoughtless. And it's a shame that it, I suggest he retire in the south of France myself. But so I wanted you to comment on that and maybe just more generally on, you know, so-called press freedom. The Al Jazeera has been banned indefinitely. Now I understand this. You know, they say it's by the Iraqi Quisling government, but it clearly, you know, where the orders came from. So I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call. And Janine, before you answer that excellent question, the first part of it was referring to Extra, the monthly, or is it bi-monthly, every 2 months?
Extra is bi-monthly, and in between you get a newsletter, which is Extra Update. Yeah, I certainly appreciate that. If folks are interested in getting subscription information to Extra, they can call a toll-free number, which I'll give right now.
Yeah, please do.
It's 800-847-3993. That's 1-800-847-3993. And also on fair.org, you can find out about Extra as well. And I'm thrilled, actually, that the caller mentioned it, because Extra does keep the lights on at
Fair. And I apologize for not mentioning it in greater detail earlier, because, as you know, Gene, I've been a contributor and supporter since the very beginning of Extra.
I'm not going to hold it against you.
Thank you.
Now, the question of, I mean, the caller basically has made his own points very well, I think. There's a certain absurdity about discussing press freedom in Iraq or the U.S. bringing press freedom, when in fact the U.S. has been closing newspapers in Iraq and at one point was not just banning Al Jazeera, but was actually bombing Al Jazeera in various places. So it's crazy, really.
And if I'm not mistaken, the U.S. picked government in Iraq currently has already implemented, and it's during the Fallujah campaign, it's martial law, which has eliminated formal press freedom in the entire country.
Exactly. And there are new, especially strict rules for journalists who are embedded in Fallujah as well, that even further restrict their ability to talk to folks on the ground and to report back what they are seeing. So it's really... I don't know if it's meant to be arch, you know, not having heard it, but certainly there's nothing in the facts on the ground that would lead you to believe that the U.S. campaign is bringing greater press freedom to Iran.
We're talking to Janine Jackson today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have two comments I'd like to make, and I'll just rattle them both off. First of all, an earlier caller was... talking about how your broadcasters get a little sarcastic sometimes. You know, if I found that there was a program on this station a couple weeks ago criticizing another program on another station for being too academic and saying that there wasn't, you know, enough emotion on the program, and they didn't like that approach. And then if you do, you know, state your positions very seriously in an emotional way, you just honestly get upset and express that you're irritated and offended at what you know, these corporate CEOs or politicians do. Well, they turn around and they say you're shrill. Oh, you're some, you know, wild-eyed, you know, shrill conspiracy theorist or something.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me like sarcasm and basically sarcasm seems to be the most effective, or at least a very effective way of getting the message across, because you kind of go along with it, but then you point out how, you know, it's just total nonsense, and it just seems to be like a way that people tend to understand the message a lot better.
Uh-huh.
My second point is that I just think the corporate media is just worthless now. I mean, the news doesn't inform, and the entertainment programs aren't even all that entertaining, and it seems like some of their best creative work goes into the advertisements. And even if you wanted to have, you know, say some kind of politically conservative media, it should be, you know, based in the community or some other kind of group rather than corporations anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are my two comments, and I'll get off and listen.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate that. I appreciate very much the comment on tone. You know, sometimes I think there are lots of different ways to go on that, and, you know, I think I personally may lapse into sarcasm as an alternative to getting very depressed, you know. So there's that. But there's also the point that if what you're hoping to do is to persuade people, then, of course, you want to have kind of, then sometimes blandness can help. But at the same time, part of what I think progressives need to do is to celebrate ourselves and to talk about ourselves and reinforce our own ideas and sort of shore one another up and not worry quite so much about convincing people who disagree with us. And I think that partly informs the tone of the show. And then on the second part, I would simply say the caller is not alone. I seem to hear more people saying kind of, you know, as much as I'd like to be engaged, I find none of it engaging. I find even the little nuggets of worthwhile things that I used to sit through the dreck waiting for, I'm not finding anymore. I too have the kind of feeling, mine is more about journalism in particular. It seems to have lost its way. It really seems to have lost its way. For me, I see that as an opportunity. In a sense, I see people's frustration with the media we have, their disgust in some cases, they're turning away from it. I see that as an opportunity, as a lot of energy waiting there to be directed and facilitated towards changing media and turning it into something that we could get excited about, both in entertainment and in information. Part of the problem, as you know, Bob, with media reform is that you're asking people to believe in something that they haven't seen,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we're just at imagining at this point. But I think in another way, that's very hopeful and very helpful, and we have an opportunity to think, what would you like to see when you turn on the television? And those ideas really need to be brought into the media reform movement, those positive, descriptive ideas of what we want, because that's going to shape the way we fight.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. Line 3, Urbana, you're on the air with Janine Jackson.
Hello. We have a small kernel of media reform going on here in town right now. The program Democracy Now!, hopefully soon will be in January, I believe, broadcast on an Urbana public access station. On Monday night, there's like a city council meeting. People who are interested in having this happen should show up and support it. So when the background is that the mayor kind of vetoed this when we tried to do it earlier, but it looks like it may happen. Anyway, 7:30 tomorrow night at on Vine Street. You'll have to look up the address. Anyway, that's for the listeners. For Janine, could you comment on Democracy Now!? Do you think this program, as I do, is an exception to kind of the other journalism we're talking about right now?
First of all, I appreciate the localism call out, because that's actually at the end of all our talks when people say, what can we do? I generally say, well, I bet there's someone in this room who knows of an event, who knows of a fight that's going on locally around a radio show where you can get involved. So I appreciate that myself, knowing what's going on there. As for Democracy Now! Itself, I absolutely am an admirer of the show. I think it's an example of what the alternative press can do. I love that it's a daily news program that gives you perspectives that you're just not going to hear in other places. And I know that some folks love it, some folks love to hate it, but if you really ask yourself, what do we have nationally, daily, hard news that is not from the perspective of the rulers, you know, as Amy Goodman, the host, puts it, Democracy Now! is really it. And it is a way of saying, look, this can be done. This is not a big budget show. This can be done. Progressives and people who are just critical, who just have a different idea about doing journalism, can do it and can be successful at it. So I'm pleased to see it get a wider airing.
We're talking to Janine Jackson today in Media Matters. We've got a little under 10 minutes left. And Janine, I'd like to turn the conversation away from Fallujah in Iraq and foreign policy and global politics for a second, return to the United States, because much of FAIR's work and much of your own work deals with domestic politics, and we've talked a little bit about the election. One of the big battles after any election is framing what it means, what the implications of the voters' turnout suggest for policymakers in the direction of the country. And the big moral of the story coming out of the November 2nd victory by President Bush of his reelection was that this was a statement of the Americans, their desire for a moral presidency and moral policies. What's your take on, you know, the spin campaign and the analysis of what the election means?
Well, the moral values line in particular is such an example of, you know, the tiny little echo chamber that is our mainstream media. You know, here is basically the take of a handful of people. It's based, I don't know how much listeners know, but really that whole discussion is based on a single exit poll question, you know, asking people, what motivated you to vote for the candidate you vote for? And then there were a list of things presented, one of which was moral values, and a number of people chose that. Well, if you know that's the kernel of the story, if you know that's the nugget of the story, a number of questions come up. If someone stops you, a stranger on the street, and asks you, what do you care more about, moral values or these other things? There's all kinds of reasons that you might say moral values. I mean, so my first point is just how thin a thread of evidence it can take to start a whole talking heads, punditocracy conversation that then goes around and around and around. And I think this moral values thing is one of those, unfortunately. And I think it's also simply a question. I always come back to the poverty of the debate. There are a number of folks that I've talked to. No two of them have the same feeling about what exactly these election results mean. And so if I can make a sort of basic call, it's that we need to be hearing that range in the media, because when I turn on the television, I hear only one thing about what the election meant. It meant a mandate for George Bush, and it meant a mandate particularly because of these moral issues. There's much, much, much different that can be said based on different information, equally valid information. I'm hearing it and reading it in other places. I'm just not getting it in the nightly news.
You know, one of the things that's interesting on that moral values analysis, as you know, because John Nichols shared it on the Diaz with us last week, is that exit polls following the 96 and 2000 elections show that a comparable percentage of voters made the same expression then, but there was no then discussion after the election that it was a mandate on moral values.
Exactly. Clearly, media can make a decision of what piece of information they're going to pick up on and make their theme. This was an election that was nearly 50-50, if we're going to, leaving aside a whole host of questions that I know listeners know about. But, you know, arguably, you have half the country, at least, that did not vote for George W. Bush. So coming out of the election, the question and the discussion could be, why is the country so divided? You know, what is it that the folks who wanted to vote Bush out, what's on their mind? What are their specific criticisms? A number of different ways media could have gone. The problem is what we've seen is once they pick a theme, generally a very simplistic theme, it's very difficult to move them off it, to even when there's plenty of countervailing information.
Well, I think you're getting at my next question. In fact, I'm sure many of our listeners are wondering about this, which is the quality of the electoral process on November 2nd, how reliable the vote counting has been. If your email box is similar to mine, Janine Jackson, it has been flooded for the past 2 weeks with articles, commentaries, opinions on this issue, that the vote count was not accurate or was not entirely kosher. What is your take on this, and what's your take on how the press has covered this issue?
Well, my feeling is that we are not seeing anything like the quantity and the seriousness of media investigation into intimidation, into broken machines, into miscounts, into problems around the country, which I have seen at least enough fairly documented examples of things going wrong that it seems I'm comfortable saying there's a crisis. Now, the thing is, there was a crisis in 2000. Media have had years to look into the issue of voting access, and they simply haven't done it, and they're not doing it now. And what's most frustrating to me is that there seems to be a feeling in the media that if the outcome of the election does not hinge on these issues, then they don't matter. To me, what that says, that sends the message to all of those people who don't vote at all because they don't believe their vote counts, that tells them that they're right. You know, because even the media are not interested to find out why some people's votes weren't counted if they don't think the election actually hinges on it. That, to me, is very, very frustrating and depressing, and seems to me an abandonment of some pretty basic journalistic responsibilities.
And, I mean, I would think that it's in everyone's interest that whoever wins an election, there's a general sense that they want it fair and square, even if, you know, the party in power would want that.
Exactly. Well, if media were banging that drum, if media were saying, hey, we can't really talk about this as a legitimate win until we actually find out what went wrong here, 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 and here, then I think the tone of the conversation would be different, and people who are raising questions would not be being dismissed as whiners, as poor losers, or as lunatics. That doesn't help anybody. There are serious things to be investigated here. Just because some of the claims you get in your email may seem as though they're far-fetched, if you allow that to make you dismiss this whole very, very important story, then I think you're making a serious mistake.
Janine Jackson, when you try to make sense of the world and critique news media and understand what's going on, what media do you use? What's your diet of daily media look like?
Well, you know, at FAIR, we tend to divide it all up. You know, we consume the mainstream as much as we can tolerate. And then I look at websites like Common Dreams, like Working for Change. I look at things that compile columns and things from a range of sources that I might not be able to get to myself. I look at media criticism sites like Romanesco from the Poynter Institute, and I look at the foreign press. I look at The Guardian, at The Independent. And then I also look, in large part, at things that people send to me, links that people send to me on particular stories and particular issues, many of which lead me to resources that I might not have known of before.
We're talking to Janine Jackson. Janine, we've only got about a minute left. And what sort of projects is FAIR working on in the coming year?
Oh, my goodness. Well, a lot of that's going to depend on what media are doing, but we're going to definitely be doing work on media reform, on policy changes. We're going to be looking more probably at our friends at Fox and our friends at the New York Times. We'll be looking at racism issues in media, which there's plenty there to talk on that hasn't been getting so much coverage yet. It's hard to tell exactly what we'll be doing, but when you see something on television that makes you throw your shoe at the set, odds are that'll be what we're working on that week.
Now, your colleague Peter Hart wrote a very big-selling book on O'Reilly called The O'Reilly Factor. Mr. O'Reilly's had some problems in the meantime, but that seems to have been swept aside now.
Absolutely, and I presumably, having settled his sexual harassment lawsuit, Bill O'Reilly will be now back up in the pulpit explaining to us how we all need to be more moral.
Do you think if Bill O'Reilly had been a Ralph Nader supporter or had been a Dennis Kucinich supporter, that he would have been treated the same way?
No. I can give you a real short answer on that.
That's good, because we don't have very much time left in Janine Jackson. I want to thank you very much for being our guest today on Media Matters. It's always a pleasure to have you. My name's Bob McChesney. You've been listening to Media Matters here in WILL, AM 580. I'd like to let you all know that if you'd like to get a weekly email from our producer, Victor Picard, which will give you a biography of our guests, plus links to how you can learn more about them, just send an email to Victor, vpicard@uiuc.edu, vpicard@uiuc.edu. And join us next week for Stephen Hartnett, 2 weeks from today from Paul Krugman. Again, I'll see you then. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Classic Tan and Swimwear, Champaign; Colonial Pantry, Champaign; and Spectrum Consulting in Mattoon. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, partly sunny with a high in the upper 40s and north winds around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and north winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy. The high in the lower 50s with northeast winds around 5 miles per hour in the morning, shifting to the southeast in the afternoon. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. 580 on your AM dial and on the internet at WILL.UIUC.EDU. It's 2 p.m. Central Time. A Prairie Home Companion is next.